The reason we only stock D'Addario strings is because D'Addario strings are perfect.
When people come in here, they think that we get them for free or something like that, but we don't. We have no other reason except for dependability and tone.
They say tone is in the hands, so use those hands to smash the like and subscribe button, and your tone will improve as you watch these rig rundowns.
I can hear it now.
What a pinch harmonic.
Keith, hey man, thanks so much for having us today.
Good to see you, brother.
Good to see you.
Throwing my pick around.
Yeah, right. Hey.
Thanks for coming to hot Cincinnati.
God, right? Yeah.
It's a little tropical.
Yeah, yeah, it is. So tell me about this guitar.
Yeah, so this PRS is a sort of an ongoing project. It started from me wanting to see if I could get a guitar that I could lean on most of the night.
Yeah.
So it had the versatility I needed and
sure.
a better tonal response than my Telecaster that I bonded with.
Yeah.
So we kind of spec'd it out similar to my Telecaster in neck length, but I also have some Gibsons that I love. So we sort of took all these measurements for the back of the neck from a couple of guitars and amortized them and ended up in nowhere land.
Sure.
So that's a work in progress.
That's a good start.
It worked in theory.
Yeah, right.
But so that's a work in progress. But the feel of the guitar is really great. The weight's great. I had them do a particular stain and finish on it.
Oh, beautiful.
So everything about it on the whole has been quite good. But the neck, we just haven't kind of got that right yet.
Tell you that F-hole, that's got to be like your idea, right?
Yeah, well, I wanted an F-hole, but I thought, well, we should do something a bit unique.
Yeah.
And so I sent a picture of my tattoo
right.
to Paul, and we cloned that originally, but then we sort of thought, well, we should do something that's just a slight bit more, you know, because it's a very curvy guitar,
yeah.
so we should have a bit more flow to it. So Paul designed that.
Well,
which was just a kind of a take on this with a little
it.
More style. So that's why that ended up like that. And we've used it quite a bit on the tour already. Super versatile. It's really been good, except I've had issues with the neck.
Yeah.
Just getting the feel and everything. He tweaked this out a little bit here so I could get up quite high on it. This one actually ended up total Fender scale in its length. So that it had the familiarity of my guitar.
Yeah.
But you know, with guitars, the second you change one aspect,
right.
all the data goes out.
Sure,
so
yes.
So if the body's not the same weight and same shape, then this suddenly doesn't feel like it did on my guitar, you know,
gosh.
That kind of thing.
And for the longest time, the only guitar I saw you play was that maple top Tele Clarence.
Yeah, which I've got here. Can you grab that, Chris?
I mean, I remember seeing you with four-wheel drive on the ranch, and that was your rig. You had that?
Yeah.
A Boss overdrive.
Yeah.
And a PV.
PV Bandit.
Bandit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a compressor.
Yeah.
Which I never turned off.
Yeah.
And now I've realized why, because solid-state band likes it. Yeah, this is Clarence. And
God, how great.
Again, I mean, I've had it since new, and it's one of those classic things where, you know, I bonded with it immediately, and I know it better than any other guitar.
Right.
But it's got tonal limitations. It's not a great Tele. You know, like I have a 51 Nocaster that sounds so much better, but I don't know it like I know Clarence.
Right.
So I was trying to find, with Paul, I was trying to develop something that took all the elements of this that I feel comfortable with.
Right.
But with much better tone.
Wow.
That was kind of it, really.
So is the idea, is that going to be a production model? Is that the
That's plan? The goal. But what happened?
Oh, great.
Can you grab that other one, the other PRS? It's classic, right? So we spend so long going back and forth on all of the stuff.
Yeah.
Every little minutia detail. And then I have a studio in Nashville, and Deep Purple were cutting a record there.
How cool is that?
Yeah, insane. With Bob Ezrin producing.
If you could tell your 15-year-old self.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Simon McBride, who's an amazing player,
yeah,
had this PRS, and I picked it up and played it. Was like, oh my God, this thing feels like unbelievable. Like yeah. the neck felt amazing. Everything, I was like, what is going on? It has no truss rod.
Wow.
No steel truss rod. It's got a marimba wood truss rod. So there's no steel in there, which made for a fatter neck. But for some reason, it was way more comfortable than my skinnier neck, which is more like Clarence, because it's just proportionate with itself, sustains beautifully. And
wow.
And it's just so versatile, you know.
Oh.
And it just roared, and like I didn't do anything to it, so
wow.
Go figure, Paul.
Yeah. Yeah, and no truss rod.
No.
God, so is it it's just it ju- doesn't
it has
move.
These other kind, and I've got a Martin, a D28, it's a sure. 1946.
Yeah.
So it has no truss rod in it either because of the steel shortage.
Sure.
And so it's a big fat neck, but yeah. there's a sort of a, I mean, it's just all the vibrations are going through wood.
Right.
Not meeting some other element and going, right. what do I do with this, you know?
Yeah.
So there's something magical about it, and I was sold immediately on it. And I think what we're going to end up doing is speccing one of these out with a few more of my own little aesthetic things, but this guitar ended up having so much more of what I wanted right out of the gate.
Isn't that amazing? You're tweaking the other one.
Yeah. You know what it is? It's like, I always say this, like no matter what your guitar tone is, whatever you got going on, this is what guitarists are like. We're the guy sitting in the restaurant, we've ordered our meal, it arrives, we love it, and then we see the waiter taking a meal to the other table and I go, what's that?
Oh, right, right.
Should have ordered that. That
yeah,
looks so
order
much
regret,
better.
Right?
That's us with tone. Yeah. And you know, yeah. you guys see a guitar player playing in a cover band in some little place and he's got like nothing cheap amp and a cheap little thing and it sounds amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was you.
Yeah.
Yeah, back in the
tone
day.
Tone is tone.
Yeah, right. Yeah, man, when I think about you, I think, man, that is a guy that shows tone really is in the hands, man, because it sounds like you regardless.
Oh, you know? Well, thank you. No, it has to go up at the end.
Yeah. It's, well, hey, what else, what other guitars do you have out? What's in rotation?
I have a 64 Strat that I've had forever that gets a lot of use in the show. I keep it capoed up, so all the step-up songs I do on it. And I don't know, it's just I've just had it forever, and it was pretty beat up when I got it, and it's become even more so.
Switch him on.
Huh?
I'll switch it on.
Okay.
Oh yeah, that's great.
You know, again, I just...
God, that's
what I've decided. I really wanted to shoot for no distortion pedals at all on this whole tour, so I ended up with this Marshall Super Lead.
Yeah.
Where I just dimed the guitar for that.
So you're really doing it just through volume.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Wow. Then. I can get everything I need wherever I am.
Right.
And there's no pedals.
Oh, that's
so I was very happy with that.
God, yeah.
Finally.
That is great. Looks like Chris is tuning up the next.
Yeah, and this is one of these Novo guitars that I really love these guitars.
Oh, yeah.
This one's tuned down a half step because I do a couple of songs, one in particular, Cop Car, down a half. And. And
Brian Nutter, right?
Brian Nutter,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's so...
that's great.
It has a nice bell vibe to it.
You know? So is this something you told Brian, I want the P90?
No, he sent it to me just like this.
Yeah.
And I loved it immediately. Yeah. I did nothing to it.
Oh, that's great.
Except drop it down a half step.
Yeah.
That's really it. But they do great guitars.
Yeah, yeah.
I use this on Cop Car because I need something that has articulation but can saturate if you dime it up too.
Sure.
So, this is my Mustang.
Oh, God, that's great.
Which I do one song in the set that's on the bass.
I love the electrical tape holding
when this guitar arrived, this thing was broken and it was sort of like stuck up like this, and I couldn't bend it back down, so I stuck gaff around it and we just left it.
Yeah, why fix it?
Right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So what is the story on this Mustang?
Well, what happened was my bass player, Jerry Flowers, who was born in 1972, was turning 50 a while back, and I thought, well, I'll get him something from 1972.
Yeah.
And I did a song one time a few years ago with Wendy Melvoin, who played a Mustang.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I just loved how punchy and pokey. If a set of NS10s were a bass guitar, it would be the Mustang.
right. Yeah.
Just like so punchy.
Yeah.
And so I ordered one for Jerry that I found online, and it didn't look like it was going to arrive in time. So I was panicked. So I found another one, and that one arrived at the same time the other one did. So I ended up with two. So I gave the really good one to Jerry, and then that one I kept.
You kept the broken one.
Yeah, the broken one. So that's how that story.
It's funny. That's a cool theme, because Dan Huff was saying on his birthday, you showed up with his birthday guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're born in good years.
Yeah.
You know?
So. Yeah, that's great.
This is I think it's a 65. Chris, is this 65? It's 64. No, there you go.
Okay.
Well, this was actually a gift from Dan Huff. He had this at his house for a long time, and it's just one of those things. I mean, you have to play it, because it's just got a...
God,
you know, certain guitars have the mojo in them.
God, it is so
for
light,
just playability.
Man. It's just like a... Get this thing out of my hands.
No. It's just, I just loved it. I love the simplicity of it, and God, punches through the PA. And
I love that you're using, that you don't, you can do it all with your controls.
Yeah.
Right there. God.
Yeah, yeah, that was always
how
the goal.
How liberating, right?
It's liberating, yeah. Well, because so much of what I do is spontaneous, as far as like, you're going to go for a solo ride, or you're not going to go for one. And if I'm way over there and my pedals are somewhere else, it's just screwed. So.
That's what I love about your shows, how jammy it is.
Like,
you just go, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we don't have time restrictions, which are like, they're so evil.
Yeah.
You know, like they come up and they go, oh, it's 11 o'clock curfew tonight. And I'm like, it's the last thing a musician wants to hear.
Right.
So, because I have a clock on stage.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah, right. Counting down.
Yeah, and some of these places, man, they switch things off at 11 p.m.
So yeah, right.
Like, even if you're playing, you're not. So.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, that's
okay.
That's a lot.
Well, that is very cool.
That's
64, and the fact that it came from Dan, that's just makes it even cooler.
Yeah. That, by the sounds of it.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, this looks like,
this is a 52, first year Les Paul.
Oh, how great.
Which has got a bit of weight in it. Obviously.
Yeah.
But
wow, man. Original pickups, the whole deal.
Everything's original. I dropped the trapeze down because, you know, it never stays in tune.
Yeah, yeah.
So Joe Glaser, Nick, the guys down there at Glaser who do such great work, fixed this for me in place.
Yeah.
And it's just been it's been a great guitar for me, too.
You've had this for a while, right?
I have, probably since 2000, maybe 2007 or 2008.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that you've been touring with it the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so, yeah, again, every setting on this thing is so mojo. So, everything's original parts, pick up the P90s, obviously everything else.
Yeah.
Trapeze, tailpiece, which for me was always going out of tune for the way I play. Joe, and was it Bukovac that designed these?
Well, Glazer did that one first.
Right.
That was like, that is the first one that Joe made.
Right, wow. Okay.
For the wraparounds, because you know, they're supposed to go under.
Yeah.
You can't palm view.
Yeah. And Les Paul apparently hated it. He's like, what are you doing?
Yeah. But so he did, what do they call it? The stud finder?
Yeah,
which sounds like a website that Heidi Fleiss is involved in.
I think
it's the Chippendales audition website. It does, you know, we fixed it, does the job, and it kept, so always that balance between originality and playability.
Sure.
Because if you don't play it and it's all original, does it matter?
Yeah, right.
If a tree falls in the forest, right?
Yeah.
When I bought Clarence, which was in 1999, brand new, I took it back to Australia. And for me, that was the most expensive guitar I'd ever bought in my life.
Right.
I was playing a Fender Squire Strat, piece of shit, you know. but that was my guitar.
Yeah.
And I'd go home and play this telly.
Yeah.
And it was just gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, I wish I could take this on the road. Oh, well, under the bed, you know, like, right. Like a complete idiot.
Yeah.
And then one day I was like, why don't you just play that guitar?
Yeah,
right. You know, so I took it out. It fell off the stand. It got a chip on it. And I'm like, all right, road guitar.
Yeah.
So for me, that moment was so defining because I mean, they're guitars. They're meant to be played.
Yeah. And didn't you, at one point, did you take the neck pick out of that or was it just the middle that you used?
So it was a little influence from Brent Mason.
Sure.
Because I was dragging my Strat and my Tele around everywhere.
Yeah.
And I thought, it'd be great if I could just kind of just have the Tele do everything.
Yeah.
And then I saw Brent with the three pickups. Yeah. So I go, oh, genius. You know, so I experimented with putting one in the middle.
Right.
It didn't sound good.
Yeah.
It just sounded like a Tele trying to be something else.
Yeah. You know, that isn't that amazing? Brent was so influential, is still so influential.
Oh, yeah, he's a monster.
Everybody was chasing that sound.
Yeah.
You know, he defined.
But 90s. He nailed it, too. He's the only one I've heard that really nailed it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He's such a badass.
Yeah.
He did something recently at Fender that we did a little opening in Nashville.
Right.
Oh, just hearing him play.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah. It's crazy.
To this day.
It's crazy good.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Well, Keith, I know you've got a show you got to do, and
I should show you the little mating first.
Oh yes, please.
Hey, Chris, can you grab the little mate? Oh, there you go.
There we go. Look at that little guy.
So the last one I want to show is this mating that it's an Australian company. They've been around a long time. The name actually comes. It's so bummer that it's so close to Martin, but it's mating.
Yeah.
But the guy who started the company in the 40s, I think, was Bill May, and the original name was Maytone.
Oh.
T-O-N-E.
Okay, there we go.
So they got rid of the E and it became Maton. That's where the name came from. It's all Australian woods. And this is a diesel model. So a guy called Diesel, Johnny Diesel, back in the 80s, Mark Lazotte is his name, designed this little guy. And I wish it was... It just...
Oh,
it,
yeah.
It, I mean, when the PA's on, because it's not... It just roars through the PA.
Oh, I'm sure.
And because of its size, you can literally crank it up as loud as you can stand it, stand over the wedge, and it won't take off.
Oh.
It's crazy. I mean, without a feedback buster or anything, because it's so tiny, but it's a ballsy little thing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Maton really is the gold standard of an acoustic tone plugged in. Between you and Tommy Emmanuel,
Tommy's a freaking god.
God, yeah. He's touched by the hand of God.
Oh,
incredible.
He's insane, yeah.
Yeah, what is it about Australian guitar players?
I don't know, but him and his brother used to play, Phil Emanuel, who's also was a monster.
Incredible.
Yeah, I used to go see them play in the 80s at a little club, just the two of them. It was insane.
God.
Yeah, it was like going to school.
Yeah. Well, Keith, man, I can't thank you enough for joining
us. My pleasure.
Yeah,
thanks,
man.
Thanks for braving the sweat.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, wouldn't have missed it.
Hey, everyone, it's Keith here. We are backstage, and I just want to take a second to talk to you about these picks that we've come up with with our good friends at D'Addario. This combination of Alton with the raised edges, but only to one corner. Because I hold it on that angle, those raised plastic bits, there's that riffing of the strings that I really like. So ultimately you've got three choices: thick, clean, and then rigid for a little bit of grip and bite.
Hey y'all, we are back in Nashville. I'm with Chris Miller. We ran out of time on stage. You guys had It's like a rolling festival.
It's three opening acts before. It's a pretty steady day.
So Chris was kind enough to open up the I guess this undisclosed location where they do a lot of gear stuff. Mm-hmm. So taking us through the rest of Keith's rig. Now, Chris, the first thing I wanted to ask you about was picks and strings. What is Keith using?
We've been to Dario strings for ever.
Right.
What
flavor are you using?
We switched to the NYXLs when they came out, because I don't know anybody that is familiar with Keith's playing. He's rather aggressive. And these hold better than anything, and they sound great. And then this year, the big change is we went down to 10s on majority of his guitars.
And he was running 11s before that?
Yeah, 11s on everything, and then acoustics, 13s on acoustic.
At standard
pitch.
Yeah. Just ripping it.
Yeah. Oh. No shortage of adrenaline in that.
Yeah, yeah, right.
None. No shortage at all.
Hey, and you had an interesting pick thing you were telling me about. Okay. What he's doing on that end.
That's his pick that we our partnership design with Dario again with Rob Cunningham and all the other guys at Dario.
Okay, so originally the ones I'm familiar with have this grippy stuff all over it, but this just has one little spot. What's that about?
So his thing is he does not hold a pick like, majority of your players hold, this way, and he holds the pick this way. But specifically for him, he holds it this way so that those little nubby textures hit the string, and that's a big part of the sound.
Wow.
So.
Digging in on the string.
Yeah. Huh. With a sledgehammer for a right hand, and then the nubbies on top of it. But it makes a massive difference. I mean, you hear it, so.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, it's part of it.
Right.
But, and then, I can't remember, Ultim is the material?
Yeah.
So.
That nylon-y, that bendy, you're all familiar with it.
It's not, I know it isn't nylon. He used to use nylon picks way back.
Yeah. Last time I was paying attention.
Yep. And then switch to this material just because it just like the sound better.
Huh.
And they last a little bit better. And then, but again, like I was saying, we don't, just because that's how we've done it doesn't mean that's how we're always going to do it. Like,
right.
We go through everything, picks, strings, gauges, all of it. And then he's now started messing with these a bunch in the studio and then started doing it live. Also a D'Addario pick, the casing pick.
Yeah.
Which is...
kind of tortoise-shelly, right?
Yeah. But without killing turtles.
Yeah. It's good. I'm a big turtle guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hey, man, they need every advantage they can get.
Right.
And now we're using these live as well, too. But he'll go back and forth. The main mic stand has, 7 or 8 picks on it going down. And there'll be one of these on it. He usually has one in his pocket. And then, depending on the song, depending on the mood, we'll switch.
Right. So I guess the question is, D'Addario, are you going to put these out for public consumption?
Oh, yeah. They're already out.
Are they really?
Oh, yeah.
They're like a signature pick?
Yeah. And look close, it's got his initials are in there as well.
Oh, great.
That's always fun with, fans at the end. Like, hey, give me a pick. And you hand them one, like, this is a stupid generic one. Like, no, look closely at it.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
I'm like, okay. No, that's actually what he's using.
Oh, great. Well, good. Yeah. That's cool that they're out for public consumption. I'll try them. That's great. Okay. So that's picks and strings. Now, I want to talk about these amps. I think it's really interesting that Keith is just going basically for an amp tone.
First year since I've been here we're not relying on pedals.
Wow.
Which is like, all right, let's do it.
Yeah.
We all, find new ways to change the game, make it exciting for ourselves.
Yeah.
It's like, and this year he's like, I'm doing it. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So we're using two late 70s, 100 watt Marshalls, master volume Marshalls. I mean, you love them.
Yeah. How cranked are they?
They're loud.
Yeah.
they're loud. They're both, I don't know if that era of Marshalls where they the import models, which is what we get in the States or got in the States, where they were using 6550s instead of EO34s.
Yeah.
Because there was that period of time where, for whatever reason, EO34s wouldn't survive the shipping from the UK over to the US.
I thought it was because of the power, because they're going to 120 and...
I was always told through the Marshall guys it was because the EO34, they had too many amps get returned because they wouldn't survive shipping to the US, so they went to a more robust tube, being the 6550. So, I don't know. Could be somewhere, could be both. Who knows? Yeah. Both stories sound good.
That's the secret sauce.
Yeah. Yeah. And we run them. The bottom one is the main one. Top guy is the spare.
Yeah. Do you ever have to do the... So this is just a just in case.
That's just in case. And actually, I normally have yet one more head on top. Just in case. Yeah.
Belts and suspenders.
Yes. Yeah. You never know what's going to happen.
Right. Right. So have you ever had to do the flip?
So far, not this year. I have in the past, but not so far this year.
Well, summer's coming. Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's part of what I'll be doing on this break is routine maintenance, you know, retubing, bias, make sure everybody's cool, clean all the tube sockets, all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
So that's all part of my normal gig.
Right. Okay. So the Marshall's into this battered and abused cab,
yep.
Right?
Yeah, the bottom Marshall, straight, and we run him. I think what is the volume set at? Oh, it's at 7 on the master, which you can't go much hotter than that, and it just becomes a ball of mush anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's right at the threshold of being a mess. Right. Yeah, and then this guy, I don't remember what year exactly. I mean, obviously it's another 70s cab with the checkerboard.
Yeah, high mileage on that cab.
Yeah, he's seen some gigs.
Yeah.
We took the greenbacks out just because we're pummeling it.
Sure.
And this is the first time we're using the Celestion redbacks.
Oh, really?
And previous tours we've got, they're still around here in this undisclosed location somewhere. Two carry right cabs loaded with EVs.
Oh, wow.
And, which I personally loved, but God, talk about heavy.
Yeah.
And just wanted to try something different, and he kind of is leaning more towards the natural EQ curve of a Celestion over an EV.
Sure.
So
EVs are a little clean.
Little clean, but when we were doing it all, previously doing it all, the amps were almost just for power, and everything was coming from pedals. They kind of worked better.
Sure.
Not necessarily better, but whatever.
Yeah.
In that context, it was easier. And then now that we're doing it just straight up Marshall flavor, we all know Marshalls and Celestians go together pretty well.
They were kind of made,
made
for each other.
Seems to work.
Yeah.
So now we're using the Celestion redbacks, and so far, it's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought his tone was so just expressive, man. I love the way he's just dials in a little more dirt when he needs it, sweetens it up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can really hear the personality of the guitar when they're not hiding behind any kind of pedals.
Exactly.
It's got its own. The telly really sounds like a telly.
It does indeed. Yeah, it does. And it's like, we're all pedal junkies, but it's just like there's we all also know that the more pure the single signal path, the better.
Oh, yeah. Mad respect when you don't need the crutches of pedals, man. That's great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, Keith had mentioned these baffles that I guess Pete Townsend.
Yeah.
How cool is that to be able to call up Pete Townsend and get a secret?
Yeah, and a guy known for his own hearing damage knows all about baffles.
Yeah, the deafest man in rock and roll. What he's your advisor.
Yeah, it's like, But Pete was 100% correct. I got to give him that.
He's amazing.
He turned us on to these things. What's the brand? I don't even remember now. Acoustic Sciences Corporation.
Huh.
Just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
And the one half, like if you were to look down the thing, you know, to like slice it this way, this half is an absorbing material, and then this half is reflective.
So, wow.
Yeah. And it's like, okay. And we've messed around with them, and sure enough, they work. I mean, it works great. And you can actually, you'll notice a massive difference even in your in-ear monitors.
Really?
Because with the in-ears, we don't really care so much about the volume.
Yeah.
I mean, this was done more for front of house than it was, because by this time we had started, his cabinet lives not on stage.
Right.
To give front of house a fighting chance.
Yeah, it's behind you, pointed
away,
the opposite direction.
Away.
Yeah.
And so we tried him when he had a cabinet that was on stage, and it was like, holy crap, that works. And so, you know, we'd mic it up and then just boop. And what he learned from Pete was that what Pete would do is he would arrange them in such a way, like on stage, where he'd be like, okay, so the other guys in the band don't have to hear it, but he could still find sweet spots on stage.
Oh, really?
So he could, you know, you could vibe and get the feedback,
so
feel it.
So you get a little bleed where you
want
it.
Yeah, so you can channel it, you know, however you want. And I mean, a 412 is pretty directional to begin with.
Yeah.
But then with these, it was like you could create these sweet spots. And then we found out that by putting them here and then you mic it, all of a sudden everything sounded, keep reaching like I've got my in-ear monitors, which I don't. But you could hear the difference on your in your in-ear monitor. It was like, holy crap. And it was like all of a sudden it became, well, more focused and less. Because, you know, you've only got, you know, depending on which speaker you're miking up in the cabinet.
Sure.
Everything else is blowing past that
right.
mic. But when you start putting the baffles in, all of a sudden it's like a more cleaner sound. Yeah. More, it just sounds better.
Well, I wonder, is he using that in the studio, do you know?
Oh yeah.
God, that's cool.
Yeah, we'll mess with him in the studio too. Oh. And it's like, these are the, for us, the tall ones. We've got a shorter set. Yeah. They make a big one to put in front of bass cabinets, but we've not done that yet.
Yeah. Wow, cool.
So
we're trying to do a rig rundown with the Who this summer, so I'm curious. I want to see what they're saying.
Yeah, I don't think Pete, my personal theory, and you'll have to find out for me.
Okay.
I don't think Pete was really doing it to save his own hearing. I think it was to give him less grief from Roger and everybody else in the band.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
You know, because he's not subtle as far as a player goes either.
Yeah.
Sort of loud.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's phenomenal, but it's loud.
Yeah. Okay, that is very cool. So, all right. Hey, so Chris, are you powering the amps? Are you using like a brown box or anything like that, or just running straight?
Have the luxury of, I'll show you the, we've got the big massive APC for, you know, battery backup, which is kind of like mixed feelings on. It's like, okay, the whole PA is now off because power went out. Nobody can hear you sing. You're in the dark, but your guitar rig's still working.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
it's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, my stuff won't go down. Everybody else can, but mine will keep working.
So it'll switch to a battery if need be.
Oh, yeah. That's a large enough battery. I mean, it'll go for about 45 minutes before it's like totally dead.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of juice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I come out of that guy, and then I hit, and I'm sure I'm pronouncing it incorrectly, Kikitsui power conditioner. And we stole the idea from, I can't remember who I saw it with first. It was either with AC/DC or it was with the Foo Fighters or somebody, another large stadium act.
Yeah.
It's not cheap, but...
Yeah.
Holy crap, does it work? I can literally put in any voltage I want into that thing and then precisely set it to whatever voltage I want coming back out.
Wow.
Like,
okay, so what
like
do you...
to the I run his stuff at 117.
Okay, yeah.
But I mean if you wanted to, you can adjust. You want 50 hertz, you want 60 hertz? I can adjust that too. I mean, it's
oh,
crazy.
Oh, that's great.
So, it puts out perfect 117 balanced power.
Oh.
So, that's what all his stuff is on. Mm-hmm.
Wow, okay. So clean power right at 117.
Yep.
Yeah, that seems to be the sweet spot.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I got a brown box. I usually drop it to about 117.
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten nerdy with the Marshalls, and I'll pull them out, power it up on a variac, and then see, like, run the voltage up till I get the perfect 6.3 on the heater supply. You're like, okay, there we go, 117 every
yeah,
time.
Yeah, that's some deep nerd.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So prior to the Marshalls, what was Keith running? I imagine at this point
everything. Anything, yeah.
Like I said, back in the day, I remember seeing where the
PV Bandit.
PV Bandit.
Yep.
And it sounded God, it was just like fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, he's a phenomenal player. The gear isn't isn't the secret.
Yeah,
it's the years and years of playing and practice. That
Kind of touched by the hand of God. Just a just amazing player.
Now this guy has been out on with on tour with us before.
The number one.
The number one, but it was run the other way, trying to go for just headroom. So the preamp would be on like two.
Oh, okay.
And it would be run in conjunction with, we've got a few Showman heads that I've hot rodded for them.
Oh, cool.
That also runs, they're absurd. I mean, they're fun, but it's, they run about 135 watts of just clean.
Oh, man.
Like, and I mean, a Showman, as you know, is
pretty
loud and clean to begin with, but it was like, you know, so it was, we would run that Marshall and a Showman, both as loud as you could get them before they started breaking up, and then the dirt came from pedals.
Wow.
And then last year, so part of last year and the years prior to would be that Marshall and Showman. Then part of last year was that the Showman and a Dumble overdrive reverb.
Oh, cool.
But also being run that way. Instead of using the Dumble for its overdrive, it was being run
as a clean,
clean high headroom.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it all works.
Oh, yeah.
There is no right or wrong. It's just, does it work and does it sound good?
Yeah.
You know?
You know, that's a funny thing, because I, at this point, he's been doing it a long time and I've seen him a lot, and he always sounds great. And you wonder, why does anything ever change?
Yeah. I mean,
that's what guitar players do. They're always chasing it.
Of course. You know, as a tech, you're always like, come on.
Right. You know? Not again.
Yeah, we've already, all right.
Yeah.
But, you know, I get it. I mean, I suffer from it too. It's fun.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah, yeah. What else are we going to do?
Right.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's talk about, let's jump back here to the board. Let's see what's going on here.
All right, so after we, you know, guitar into the wireless, hits the radial, JX44 splits out to my amps, and then the effects loop within the JX44 comes up here. Got the RJM, the mini gizmos. This is for, we used to do years past, we put pedals in the drawers and both of us hated it, and then forever it's like, why are we doing this? It's such a pain in the butt to
Fun to see them.
Yeah, want to see them, and then we're constantly changing stuff, which is why it, you'll, that's why it's wired the way it is, as opposed to like the super neat and pretty way where you come up from the bottom and it's like, I'm going to end up changing them.
Right.
So it's like, okay.
It's a working man's board.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's not the, it's not the blues lawyer board.
You're right.
So.
Right. Yeah.
So what we've run in the past is we would have two of all your, you know, two of your, like, okay, there's, he has the vintage super overdrive.
Right, which might be the same one he's been, because like I said, back in the day, that was.
And they do sound, and I don't, you know, they sound different.
Yeah.
They just do. You know, I don't, I'm not, I, we all have our theories as to why and whatnot. So we would run one for either the vintage-y flavor or with his Fenders, and then a different setup for ripping hot P90s or humbuckers.
Right. Because this one's just barely cracked on the drive. I mean, it's just...
Yeah. Now, the other thing is these settings on here, may or, they don't need to be accurate anymore because we're not using any of them right now. So they're just kind of here.
Right.
Right. Just because it feels weird to not have them here.
Sure, yeah.
So, but yeah, a lot of times it would be... we, especially now that we're... Sorry, I'm used to the amps being over on that, but they're not anyway. With the Marshalls being run with the preamp up super hot, you don't really need any, just a tiny touch of drive just to kind of get it, you know, using it more as a slight coloring gain boost. But like I said, we're not even using them. And then we have two different eras of Tube Screamer.
Yeah, I like that. One modern, one old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. And same thing. We would try to do like, you know, more of a Gibson-y into a Marshall versus a Fender-y into a Marshall.
Yeah.
And then... blues driver, I mean, all your standard food groups that all every guitar player probably has.
Sure.
And then we have the Rockaway version of the Archer, which has the six-band EQ.
Yeah, that's cool.
Which works phenomenally well in front of a Marshall, but again, it's he's hanging out. The 45 caliber, which was the what's supposed to be like a JTM 45, is that, I guess that's how they came up with the name. So it's not as gainy. still sound, it is a great Marshall in a box. Old school vintage rat.
Yeah.
Get your David Gilmour on.
Sure, yeah.
And it does. Just a clean boost. Nothing super exciting, but super high headroom with a tone control, which is handy. We're not even using this guy anymore, which is really, if you know,
that's the reverb, right?
That's the, yeah, it's the reverb that has that shimmer effect. They have octave, like if you hear his song, that something Blue Ain't Your Color.
Right.
Okay, that was done with, give away all the secrets.
That's kind of what this is.
Yeah,
about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're, that was a rocket pedal. It wasn't the Archer. It was the, the Animal. Was the Animal pedal into this, into a high-powered Tweed Twin.
Really?
And that's the sound you hear on the record.
Wow.
And so since that song was cut, since that album came out, we've been, that's the one case where you kind of have to use that pedal. It's a very distinct reverb. Yeah. And then now this year we're not. So if you look, it's like set off, which is kind of for my own amusement.
It's funny, we just did this rig rundown with Dan Huff, and he was using that pedal, and I think he
got it from us.
Yeah, I think he said that. Yeah, I think Keith hooked him up. He's like, yeah, I love it. Got it.
It's phenomenal, and it does that thing, you know. And it's like, okay, you have to have it to do that thing. Then we've got, what is it, the FX Engineering Mirage compressor. Greg at XTS turned me on to those years ago. And it's like, I'm personally not a big compressor pedal guy, but I grew up on heavy metal and anger and hostile music.
Not clean tellings.
Yeah. And it's one you can just leave it on. Like, you hear it, you know it's on, but it doesn't really color anything. It's very pleasing. Like, even guys like me that grew up on heavy metal is like, well, I don't hate it. I mean, I could just leave this on.
Yeah,
we can. We don't, but we can. And then there's the Effectrode one, which is just stunning to play through.
And what is it? It's
basically like having a piece of studio gear in a pedal form. I mean, it's just a ridiculously good sounding compressor pedal. And it turns your whole thing into, like, it will make you play differently, not because it's anything, just because it's like, oh, wow, it just changes.
Cool.
I don't know how else to describe it, other than it's like, it's just a phenomenal, if I could actually play well, you know, I would use one.
Yeah.
And then just another Effectrode, their buffer, to hit the front end of all this stuff.
So no delay.
Not in front of the amp. All the big stuff, like the big modulation time, like reverbs, delays, chorus, all that stuff, none of it in front of the amp. That's all post. That's done. So we normally have on his cabinet, there's three different mics. There's also a Palmer. We don't use the Palmer for monitors, just because, no.
Yeah.
But Front of House uses it. And then the blend of the three mics comes back to me, and then I hit the fractal.
Okay, and that's giving you those.
And that gives me, so I have a blend of the three mics, comes back to me, hits the fractal, and that's what my board and the expression pedals are for. And I do all the verbs and the delays and chorus and stuff in real time during the show.
Yeah, cool.
We tried to do, basically the studio approach as opposed to the bar band approach.
Sure.
You know, both are cool, both are different. You know, it's like, okay, again, try to keep as much junk out of the front of the amp as possible.
Yeah.
So, and it works. It works well.
So it sounds amazing. Now, and the wah, is that, the one pedal out
that's
there.
The one that's the one pedal he's allowed to have. And that is also the fractal.
Yeah.
That does hit the front end of the amp.
Okay.
That's the only.
So that is triggering, that's a trigger for the fractal.
Yes.
Okay.
And then that, because we've tried it in the past, it's like, I can end up done it, you know, through, you know, different means with other, was it the SGI system to run a quote unquote normal wah pedal all the way out to the end of the thrust and back. Yeah. I'm like, this works, but this is dumb.
God, it's a lot of cable.
This is like 200 feet each way.
Right.
You know, yeah. And it's like, and if anything happens to that one cable,
it's all down.
You're done.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, can we do, and I mean, the fractal stuff is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, what? Okay, which wah pedal do you want?
Yeah.
You know, okay, do you want the sweep from the Dunlop or do you want the tone? You know, and it's like, so it's, you know, voiced like a cry. We use the crybaby type fractal wah model and then it's tweaked from there.
Yeah.
You know, it's phenomenal.
Yeah. Okay, Chris, you mentioned the fractal, but you've got three of them here. What's going on with all that?
I'll give you the basic sum up.
Yeah.
So my all my wireless, you know, is here. There's one spot where he does what we call the giveaway. He plays an acoustic guitar out in the audience and then gives it away.
Oh, cool.
And then there's his main acoustic. Obviously, we're not giving that one away. But yeah. They come through. And then this fractal is just for my acoustic. So I've got different programs for the giveaway versus the main one. And then I also have one of these Acme.
Yeah, what are those?
Preamps. Al with Acme actually uses Rust Belt Studios in Detroit.
Hmm.
And then his product line is also Acme, and he makes these are the exact same circuit tube preamps in Hitsville. All the Motown records and stuff. So those circuits that are in there are exactly the same. And so his acoustic hits this one, and his bass hits this one. And I have yet to try an instrument into those where they do not make it sound phenomenal.
God, I
mean, it's just huge.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, you know, his acoustic playing is so percussive. And so he does a lot of that kick, you know, keeping time by smacking almost like a kick drum.
Right, right.
Well, which sounds great anyway, but when it goes through that, it's like, holy crap.
Yeah.
It's massive.
Yeah.
And, you know, our front of house guy Kirk keeps joking that he wants to have a console that's just like, you know, just like 16 of those and that's it.
Yeah.
He's like, everything sounds great through them.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. That's great. Could you imagine 16 of those? Oh my God.
Yeah. They just get a little warmer out at front of house.
Yeah.
You know, right. I mean, they are legit tube preamps. Well, I mean, it's, you know, so that's this fractal and those guys. This fractal is my main one. This guy is my spare / for a moment, we weren't using amps at all. We were using this guy, just the old Marshall preamp.
Yeah.
In fact, we went through all of our production rehearsals and did two shows with just this guy feeding this fractal, and that was it. And it sounded phenomenal as well.
Yeah.
Again, pros and cons to both.
Sure.
So he's always still running, even though we're using amps. So, I mean, if the shit really hit the fan and I somehow mysteriously blew up three heads.
Sure.
Then the show will still go on.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
And I also know at some point we're going to revisit it. You know, as the tour goes on, it's going to be just to make things interesting. It's gonna be like, hey, let's do on one song, let's just do something nutty and not use the real amps, let's go back over to the JMP and do whatever.
Yeah,
because you can.
Yeah, because you can.
Yeah, you know, why not?
So you all can see and hear this rig this summer and beyond. You guys are just like out, right?
Yeah, non-stop till mid-October.
Well, man, thank you for coming in on your day off.
No problem.
Chris, you're great. Y'all, thanks for tuning in. See you next time.